Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
When you were a kid, way back in the last century,
yeah,
last millennia even, what did you think 2018 was going to be like?
Oh my, what I think 2018?
Yeah.
Honestly, never thought about this year specifically.
No. Okay, wait.
Until just a few years before 2000,
mm-hmm.
all I thought about was how old I'd be in 2000.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so I was born in 67, so I knew I'd be 33.
I'd be mm-hmm. 25.
And I was like, wow, what is life going to be like when I'm 33?
16.
Oh, sorry.
Jesus Christ, Will.
I forgot the one. Forgot to carry.
I never thought as far as 2018. If you'd asked me in the mid 90s, I would have thought that 2018 might feel a little closer to Blade Runner than it currently does.
That's grim, but okay.
Yeah, well, that was my favorite movie then. Still,
I mean,
you know,
I was hoping
favorites.
For Jetsons by 2018.
Oh, yeah.
Like flying cars.
Movies do a really bad job of like projecting how far ahead, but they always say the year.
So the movies never get the triviality of technology, right? So there's never going to be a futuristic movie in which Tom Cruise bursts in a jetpack into someone's apartment and they're like videotaping their Roomba annoying their cat.
Or the entire movie is just a series of selfies from posted
like mundane Black Mirror.
Selfies in terrible positions.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Just nothing but duck faces all the way through.
Oh my God! Are they bringing back Jersey Shore?
No, that guy went. One of those guys popped up on my feed the other day.
The situation?
But, no, one of the other ones. He's like a medieval scholar. He went and got a doctorate in maybe just a master's. I can't remember, but in like medieval studies and his work showed up in a context that was not Snooki related on my Twitter feed.
Wow. Thanks for bringing these people back into my life and consciousness. 2018, after a long, what felt like a very long 2017.
It was really nice. Let me just describe this in the harshest terms possible. To put a bullet in 2017.
Remember in 2016?
R.I.P. 2017
out behind the shed.
Remember at the end of 2016 when we thought, this is can't get worse.
That's what I kept saying the other night.
Yeah.
We had a lovely party at Casa Sauvage. Sadly,
my daughter popped a 5-year-old fever at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
I hate it when they suddenly decide to be radiators.
I mean, I look, the thing that you learn is when your 5-year-old is like laying on the couch under a blanket unprompted at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yes.
When there's a house full of new toys, probably your plans are fucked.
Can you even use them as heating elements?
Look, so when my daughter has a fever, she likes one of us to come climb in bed with her when she has like fever dreams and gets scared or whatever. And you get in there, and all she wants to do is snuggle because you're cool, and she's like the white hot light of 1,000 burning mm-hmm. suns next to you.
Yeah, when Matt Damon dug up from to warm himself.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So yeah,
in the Martian.
What's that?
In the Martian, you know.
I was like, what?
I thought you were going to be Interstellar there.
No,
that got really dark in my head for a second.
So no, she's fine now. She just, you know, they get sick. They're bad for like 36 hours, and now everything's cool again.
Yeah,
so.
So we had a lovely New Year's. We sent 2017 packing. There was it was a very, we throw this party every year, pretty much, and it was a very emotional party, more than most. And it wasn't like people were weeping or anything. It was just like, this is one of the key ways in which we engage with our friends. And we have lovely gatherings, and we see them socially. And this one in particular, I felt like every goodbye was a real heartfelt and partially, you know, we got to stick together sort of goodbye at the end of the party. And it was lovely. We had some fantastic non-alcoholic drinks going. The bartenders that we hired have some really awesome, random, radical non-alcoholic drink recipes. And they made up a whole bunch. And then there were also some really great absinthe and rum-based cocktails at the party. It was great.
It's a lovely party every year. I had multiple people sent me texts and Twitter messages. Were like, hey, we're sorry we didn't see you this year. You're still on the good list, right? I was like, yeah, we were good. We're cool. But, you know, sick. So
a lot
to miss it.
A lot of friends of mine brought their spouses that I had not met or not spent lots of time with. I had not spent lots of time with Kishore's amazing wife. Mm-hmm. And holy hell are those two just like,
yeah.
Kishore is one of the most delightful humans I know, but I had no idea that spending time with him and his wife made him like X times three delightful. That was great. That was really fun.
It was wonderful to see people in their dynamics and have extended conversations with some of our friends that we only could see a couple times a year.
Yeah, my mom. My mom was there. Yeah. She was the life of the party. James Randi, the amazing Randi, came with some friends of mine and some friends of his, and that was lovely. He held court over by my couch in the living room.
Perfect.
I was thinking, because the previous year, was it the previous year that Phil Tippett sat close to that same spot, pretended to be cranky? Phil pretends to be cranky, but Phil is just a sweet pussycat of a man, and he's not actually cranky. I was thinking Randi was like the white-bearded guy over there in the corner.
Yes, yes. You can watch over the tree. Yeah. I was very impressed that you had much of your house open, and I know we've done like one video a long time ago about your home office, but you had your home office. It was great to see.
Well, the party has gotten bigger over the years, and we experimented with some flow about the house, and so we opened up much more of the house to flow to spread the party out, and it really worked. So we had my office, Julia's office. We had signs on them. Julia's office was for introverts. Mine was for extroverts.
Nice. did you Myers-Briggs people on the way in, or did you?
Like, we let them self-sort.
Okay.
We rearranged the deck, so this all sounds way overly fancy. We have this tiny little deck, but we rearranged it so it could seat more. More people, and that was lovely.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, is this the deck that we climbed up on the roof to launch?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not launch illegal drones off
but
of.
It wasn't legal at the time.
That was even a licensed thing.
Oh yeah, you could do it. It was back in the freewheeling days.
That was when
we had supervision.
Yeah, we flew a drone over the Mission District for an hour.
I at one point I think we said, "Let's see how." Well, never mind. We shouldn't talk about this. But yeah.
How did you guys spend the week leading up to New Year's? The week between Christmas and New Year's. So always exactly one week.
We did toys. I have a 5-year-old, so we played with toys. We went on road scooters and bicycles, mm-hmm. and we went all over the bay in search of wind to fly the new kite. But it's not the windy time of year right now, so we'll get some. It was good. It was
we really drove nice. Back from Portland, where we had spent a bunch of time with the families. And then Julie and I drove back from Portland by ourselves with our dogs.
Which way did you
stayed
go?
With family in Portland?
We did. Okay. Well, no, we stayed in a hotel up there, but we have a lot of family up there. So we did Christmas with them, a big, long Christmas with them, which was great.
Did you do down 101 or did you do down 5?
We did down 101 this time. So we took
so fun.
From Portland, we went due west and then south down to Gold Beach.
Oh, man.
We stayed that night in Gold Beach. And then we thought we would have a choice about how to get home. But from Gold Beach, the fastest way is 101. And we were like, wow, I guess we got 7.5 hours of driving ahead of us.
Yeah.
And so we got up really early, I think at like 6:30 in the morning. And we were home by 4. It was great.
I wish I had known you were going there. I would have told you the Tillamook factory is there.
What we did was the Tillamook factory.
It's north of Gold Beach? I can't remember.
No, it is. Jeez. We drove past it.
Oh, my God.
And that was very cool. There were a couple of microbreweries, which we were going to stop at, but they don't have public. There were a couple of places that we thought would have public areas, but don't.
Oh, like dog areas?
Yeah.
Or places, yeah.
And even places where you can go to their shop. There's some a lot of microbreweries. So we picked up some growlers for some friends.
Nice. That Tillamook factory tour, if you're ever there.
Is it great?
It's not a tour. You just can walk in and they have the factory open with glass on the top.
Yeah.
But you get to see how the cheese is made and all the machinery and the conveyor belts and all that stuff. If it's running, it's highly recommended.
Lots that's great.
Yeah. You can eat all the curds you want. Oh, they just hand them out like popcorn.
Lovely.
Yeah. If next time in Portland, have you ever stayed at the Kennedy School?
No.
Oh, it's one of the McMinniman's properties. They renovate old
like institutions, right?
And it's an old, I think, elementary or middle school, but it's a beautiful hotel Danica loves, and we stayed there once.
Oh, I'm going to ask Portland. You about that next time I go up there. We stayed at the Kempton Vintage. I love Kemptons.
Yeah.
And unbelievably great hotel. We love the Kemptons because they're dog friendly, as you pointed out. But this one, like, we're there over Christmas, and that staff working Christmas, I mean, that's a tough gig doing that service industry over the big holidays, and the staff was amazing. Like, every one of them was sunny and delightful and just fabulous. It was a great stay. It was really lovely.
It's a good walking town too, because there's a bunch of good stuff to walk to right around there. You're like near the cart pods, the whole thing. Portland's so good.
It was cold as all get out.
Really?
And there was a snow and ice storm.
Oh, great.
The night of Christmas, or the day before Christmas. So going home Christmas Eve was the second scariest driving experience I've ever had.
God, over the hills south of Crescent City?
In a Prius?
No. We rented a Nissan Armada.
What? I know what that is.
Whoa. It seats eight.
Is that an SUV that you can't see out the back of?
No, you can kind of see out the back of it. It was for the dogs and us. And once we got to Portland, I took all the kids to see Star Wars. But it was like all hydroplaning, black ice everywhere in Portland. Get on the freeway. No one's going over 30.
Yeah.
Everyone's just keeping like 90 feet between everyone else. I watched people just at like 10 miles an hour drive through fences without being able to control the direction of their car.
This is the Tesla autopilot death scenario.
Well, and I'm in the, you know, I've got like kids and dogs and in-laws in the car driving them all over Portland at this like 4 miles per hour, and my son started to make fun of how slow I was going, and
like the black ice thing,
it's real.
For a long time, when I lived in Tennessee when I was in high school, my mom and dad during the winter, the last thing they would tell me every time I left the house to get in the car and drive was, watch out for black ice.
Well, and look, I've been heavily, steeply trained in oversteer, understeer, and all that, like losing traction. And we're in this big vehicle that can handle it. And even still, it was hairy. Well, it was really hairy.
If you hit a patch of real ice, there's not a lot you can do, right?
There's not a lot you...
Like momentum.
This is the thing, is you have to drive expecting at any second your car is about to careen out of control. So you need to be going at a speed and at a trajectory that you can have options from. So it's always pumping the brakes, always like adjusting your steer. I mean, it was.
Okay, Dad, whatever. Combat driving through Portland.
Not driving with your knees.
Yeah.
No.
Norm, what did you do?
Stayed in. Stayed in San Francisco basically the entire week. We did one day trip to Tahoe.
Just a day trip to Tahoe.
It's four hours and just drove to South City.
How did Ripley do? Ripley was great.
Yeah, we took a dog. Yeah, kind of. Yeah, it's a little bit icy. You can see like patches of snow.
Could you walk
like,
on the top?
On top of the snow?
Yeah. Was it that kind of icy or did you sink in?
No, sinking. So no,
we took the dogs to some area of snow and they run up and sunk down. Oh, this is terrible. And came right back out.
They don't like the snow. Oh, we wanted to expose her to snow.
She's so skinny and thin.
I put on a sweater. She'll deal with it. Yeah. But we love driving.
I loved all the dogs in sweaters in Portland, by the way.
Very funny.
Booties, sweaters.
Yeah. Super cute.
Yeah. How about gift giving? You guys had success in your gift giving?
Yeah.
Absolutely. The thing one and thing two got some lovely gifts geared towards them.
What was your favorite gift to give?
That is a really, really great question.
This year,
I put together a Barbie dream house, Norm.
Oh, my goodness.
There you go.
You never had to deal with that, but that was a fun one.
Wow.
Gina had asked for an Instant Pot, one of those electric pressure cookers for a long, long time. And I've wanted a pressure cooker for years. She's always been hesitant simply because, you know, who wants a bomb in their kitchen?
Exactly.
That thing's amazing. It's really good.
Really?
Yeah. It's shockingly. Kenji did a whole thing about it before the holidays. But I did the whole slow play. I was like, no, we're never going to have one of those things in our house. We have a rice cooker. We have a slow cooker. We're not doing it. No. And then,
I like the theatricality. Morning. I get gift giving. Christmas morning must be like an Apple keynote.
Surprises. I want one more thing.
It's the one I had one more thing this year.
I hid the Instant Pot in my office and then pulled it out after all the presents were opened.
We go back and forth on that this year. My wife and I mean, you know, we have a nice life and we have a lot about what we need. And so sometimes we go out on Christmas and do stuff. And this was one of those years where we each bought each other just some small, lovely little things. Like really it was a very minor Christmas on that regard. Mm. I bought the boys watches.
Oh, nice.
You know, that was great thinking about watches that were specific to them. And I gave out a few of EDC One bags to some various folks, and they were very appreciative.
The I was going to say the socks. Dumbledore says it in one of the Harry Potter movies that he wants socks for Christmas.
Dude, I got socks for Christmas, and I'm so my family knows. Get me some Paul Smith socks, and I'm the happiest man alive.
I want like warm, thick, woolly, fuzzy socks, and I will be really happy. Yeah,
yeah. Those aren't cheap either. Those are good gifts.
No, they're not.
Fantastic gifts.
I saw several movies. By the way, and this is to talk about later, but I saw Shape of Water.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to oversell it because it's easy to do that. I don't want to set up too many expectations, but it's magnificent, and specifically the characters in it are unlike characters you have met in movies before.
Ooh.
Like that is something really specific to this movie. Like
not just creatures, but like
creatures, but characters, and these are people you haven't met the likes of before.
Because I see the trailer, and Michael Shannon is in it, mm-hmm. you know, and I just see Michael Shannon from Boardwalk Empire.
Nope. Even Michael Shannon is a very different character than you imagine he is going to be. There's obviously you understand he's a villain, but I also saw Downsizing.
Oh, the Matt Damon.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. Yeah. We bought a zoo part two.
Let me tell
we
you
bought
about
a smaller zoo. Yeah,
let me tell you about Downsizing. Everything you've seen in the trailer is the first 20 minutes of the movie.
Oh, I love that. Oh,
so
yeah,
it is a very different movie than you expect. It's an Alexander Payne movie, so it's. If you're familiar with Alexander Payne's oeuvre, you should be able to assess what you can emotionally expect. But again, characters, there are characters in this movie, and I don't want to over-spoil it, that you haven't met characters like them before. You really haven't. That's how unique and cool it is.
What else did Alexander Payne do?
He did The Descendants. He did the... Oh, goodness gracious.
Sideways?
Yes. Sorry, Sideways. So it's a lot of... coming of age and coming to slow realization stories. There's a lot of emotional content mm-hmm. in his movies. Mm. The Descendants is a great example. The Shailene Woodley's first big breakout with George Clooney.
Yeah, in Hawaii, right?
Yeah, So Payne is a. I kept watching Downsizing, thinking, is this a Steven Soderbergh film? Because it felt just as deeply competent and like. I was going back and forth thinking, is it that or is it a Spike Jonze film? Right? It could have been either one in terms of like how... Yeah.
I like both of those
That's
things.
This intersection that we're talking
about.
Because
it had the weirdness of a Spike Jonze premise,
mm-hmm.
but the emotional depth. Nice.
It looked like it could have been like a little K-Paxi with like a little trite K-Paxi. Bow on the end.
No, it's not simple.
Okay. We don't talk about that film anymore.
I saw The Last Jedi again. I took all the kids to see The Last Jedi.
So you had seen it just
I'd
once
only seen
when we talked about
it
last time.
We did our spoiler cast. Holy hell, it's even better the second time.
Oh, yeah.
There's so much more room to take it in on a second viewing. And again, all the scenes in Snoke's throne room are some of the most beautiful battle scenes ever filmed.
Like if you think about the gorgeous sets of 2017, that set, what's his name's office from Blade Runner?
Mm-hmm. Neander Wallace's.
Yeah, Neander Wallace's office from Blade Runner. Like some gorgeous, gorgeous lighting on those places. The thing that struck me the second time on Star Wars was that Luke basically... tells you the entirety of what's going to happen in every line of dialogue. Like, he narrates the movie in dialogue to Rey through the whole thing.
It's true. It's totally true. And it's not quite as... It's funny, like, when you realize... Like, I made the joke that Neander Wallace in Blade Runner seems to spend all of his dialogue in that movie explaining that he is the bad guy and why. Right, like all of his dialogue is, I'm the bad guy, and here's why.
But I can't create enough.
And you're right, Luke is just narrating.
Luke is just like, hey guys, here's what's going to happen.
Brace yourself.
I'm crusty and old.
I love cranky Luke. I love cranky Luke.
It's the best.
I love him drinking weird alien green tea
milking the
that was,
space
did you read the story how that was an animatronic and there were puppeteers inside there and the only thing they did in CG was make the milk look weirder afterwards.
They made the milk look tinted green.
Yeah.
But frankly, it was important to Rian Johnson to shoot that live.
Uh-huh.
And I agree with that choice. That was so clearly cold and wet and out there in the real in a way that seems right now slightly unfakeable.
Well, and it shows
getting that. Imagine getting that puppet out on a helicopter.
Oh my god!
To make that shooting day,
and then sealing two people inside of it
on a cliffside. Basically.
On a cliffside.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's a bad job.
And then having acting wiping that milk off your face, off your beard that Mark Hamill does.
Well, but not only that, like the pure kind of not giving a fuckedness of the way he plays that is right. Just so is so good.
I also love when Ray says, "I've followed you around. You are not busy." Yeah. Because it's I good. Thought it was going to go different. I was like, "I've followed you around. I can tell you're in great shape," or like, yeah. You know, whatever funny.
You're ready to
say,
train me.
Being insulting him for not being busy was not where I thought that was going to go.
Yeah. I mean. Well, all along the film, it sets something up. You think you see how it's going to go, and then Rian Johnson usurps your expectation.
You know, going back, and I know we're talking a little more about Shape of Water, but the creature in the Shape of Water, I realized, was partly designed by Mike Hill.
Yes,
Mike Hill did the design for that. Yeah,
oh, cool.
Yeah,
Mike is a master sculptor who's done some of the large, beautiful pieces that you've seen in photo essays of Bleak House, Guillermo's amazing compendium of collection of stuff.
He unveils something new at a Monsterpalooza every year, and he understands creature anatomy like in a very tangible way. So like one of those really hand-sculpted creatures.
Sally Hawkins, the lead in Shape of Water. The two leads are Sally Hawkins and Richard Jenkins. And Richard Jenkins is one of those, hey, it's that guys. Mm-hmm. He's the guy opposite Bradley Whitford in Cabin in the Woods, the other technician. Oh. You know, despite Robert McKee's exhortation to never use voiceover to explain your movie, Guillermo del Toro loves voiceover. Mm. He loves it. He's put it in most of his movies.
You think the opening of the Pacific Rim? Yeah.
But he does not necessarily. It's always at a different service. The Shape of Water, the voiceover is never really explaining the movie. It's just lending some extra depth emotionally to what's going on. Mm. And Jenkins' voice is magnificent. Like, just even in the trailer, that trailer where you hear him, you know.
I'm going to go story see it this time. Week. We'll bust
yeah,
out.
This is not really a full spoiler cast. We will be talking
about it. It's a beautiful fairy tale. And I love that it's getting so much critical acclaim, that it's doing so well. It's doing well in the box office, right?
It's a limited release.
Okay.
Very limited.
I really hope this film has legs at the box office and with the Oscars, because it is the kind of exciting, non-franchise, original project that we need more of in the movies.
You know, last year in 2017, the only movie I think that made it in the top 10 box office-wise as an original story was Dunkirk.
Right. Yeah. Right. Everything else was a franchise or an adaptation.
Mm-hmm. Nine Marvel movies and Star Wars.
Well, and a couple of years ago, there was several articles about how we should support Jupiter Rising, even if it's a hot mess, because it's an original film with a lot of energy and money put into it, like Valerian.
Yes.
Except here with Shape of Water, it's a truly magnificent, unassailably brilliant.
Have you guys seen
movie.
Valerian?
Yeah. Valerian.
We never talked about it. I thought I was. I liked Valerian
I liked
a lot. Like I
miscast, I think, a little bit in the leads, but I thought story wise it was fantastic. Like, visually, of course.
I still haven't finished it. I got about 45 minutes in and I couldn't take the dialogue.
I'll tell you this: I got a new TV this past month.
4K
HDR, which means like TV movie experiences. I'm just like. Give me the best you got. Massage my eyeballs. I don't care if the movie's good. Just give me the visuals.
Wow. Do you have to down crank its resolution to watch older movies? Because I find
The upscaling's been okay. The graininess you sometimes see, but it's fine.
A friend of mine was teaching a film class at SF State, and he knows Walter Murch and brought Walter Murch in to give a lecture to the students. If you don't know who Walter Murch is, look him up. He's an absolute legend and a genius. And Walter Murch came in, and the college's video projector, Walter Murch looked at it and was like, "Nope, we can't show my movie on this." He's like, "It's upscaled, and it's making my movie look like a soap opera. It's over-sharpening it. And unless we can down-crank it, there's no reason to watch an old movie on this terrible upscaling projector."
Yeah, you definitely need to tweak and tune. And that's part of the joy of like buying. It's part of the frustration and joy. Like, people are spending money on these TVs these days. I'm sure a significant portion of those people don't even have the HDR enabled or something, right?
Right, like, right, right.
So, but it's going through the AVS forum and saying, "Oh, am I going to turn setting to
I don't want to have
10 or 30 for denoising or sharpening?" Oh. Yeah, I love it.
The one joy, the one great joy of not going home at the holidays is that I don't have to go see all my relatives that have their TVs with motion smoothing on.
Oh God, yeah,
right,
yeah. Right, because you're sitting there, you're like, why does this look so vibrant and terrible? Yes. What's going on here?
No, it's everything looks like a basketball game.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like,
yeah,
even like It's a Wonderful Life feels like Shaq's about to burst through the wall.
Where's the Kool-Aid man? What the hell's going on here? I'm so confused.
I'll give one recommendation. We finished The Crown Season 2, which I highly recommend. Beautiful production. But Godless, which is a Netflix series. Have you heard of this? Godless. It's a Western. It's completely written and directed by screenwriter Scott Frank. And it's about a mining town. And I believe, I'm not sure exactly what it is. But it's like, it's Jeff Daniels. Daniels is the villain. Sam Watterson's in it. One of the, Michelle Knockery, I want to say, Downton Abbey is the lead. But it's a mining town called La Belle where an accident years ago killed all the men. And 83 men died in 5 minutes. And that's the premise. And it opens with a town that's run 90% by women. And a looming gang comes weeks away.
What's the name of it?
Godless.
Oh my gosh, that sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
I'll check
that out. And Jeff Daniels is the leader of the gang.
He's the villain.
Oh.
Yeah. Jeff Daniels is an undersung, even though he's becoming more culturally sung. Like, he's an amazing
Newsroom
actor.
Was kind of a moment for him, right? But like Dumb and Dumber, you saw his range.
Just before we wrap, one of the reasons I love having parties is to introduce people I know to other people I know.
Yeah.
And my favorite meetup this year, as we've talked about on the podcast, I released the EDC One bags. Mm-hmm. I started a gear company, Savage Industries, and I hired a young designer to design some patches for me for this bag. And we've been going back and forth on these patches, and he's amazing. But I didn't know what to pay this kid.
That's always like, nobody knows what to pay designers, it turns out.
And I realized, wait a minute, I actually know somebody who is in the business of blogging about how to comport yourself as a young designer and how to pay designers and treat them fairly. Mike Monteiro.
Oh, yeah.
Mike has had a singular mission for the past few months to get Jack to quit Twitter. I believe Mike's Twitter handle is "I want Jack to quit" or some version of that.
So, but prior to his old man crankiness, he designed a lot of the early web. Mm-hmm. Like he was at Mule Designs, and prior designed, like, I think Flickr was one of the ones that he.
Mike is a master, and he's wonderful, and he's been a good friend for a long time. And we love getting together to complain about politics. And so I wrote to him, and I was like, "Mike, what should I pay a young designer?" And he was like, "I'm really glad you asked." He goes, "What is it? You know, what's it for? What is it? How does it work?" Okay, and he came back with a thing and said, "By the way, if that kid wants to reach out to me, let me know. Please pass on my details." I remember being a young maker of things and having no idea what to charge. And I got to introduce the two of them to each other. And Mike was like, "Whatever you do, charge double what you thought you should charge. And by the way, double zero is still zero, so don't be an asshole and do anything for free." He says this to the kid.
Well, I mean, but like it's a hard thing, especially when you're starting out, to get to a point where you're like, "I don't think I'm very good at this. Is my time seems like it should be worth zero because that's what I think it's worth in my head."
Right.
And like the thing that he does on his blog, is it on the Mule Designs blog or is it on his Medium blog?
That's maybe a good question. I'm not exactly sure.
If you search for Mike Monteiro, it's Monteiro, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think most of the stuff is on his Medium blog.
I think you're right.
But yeah, it's super important that you establish what your time is worth, and you figure out a way to do this and make a living at it.
Young designer Isaac is very fast, and as Mike points out, time and materials does nothing but screw the maker.
Yeah,
just charging for time and materials because it punishes you for being fast.
Yeah.
You have to. There's an industry standard for what you pay for X with this amount of rights, and that's what that should encompass. And it was delightful on both halves of the equation.
This is the thing that Brian, our friend Brian Lamb, figured out with Wirecutter before anybody else. He was like, "Look, advertising sucks. It's not a model that's going to pay for the work that needs to be done if you want to actually review products.
Yeah.
Like, take the time. He pays his writers hourly.
Yeah.
So, you know, they get paid for testing time and writing time. Traditionally, writers get paid by the word.
Right.
When at this point, it's like anywhere from 5 cents to maybe a buck if you're writing for Condé or something.
Yeah.
And like, you can't do 40 hours of testing on a set of products.
No.
For a 500-word review that you're going to get paid $30 for.
Indeed.
Yeah, so anyway, yeah, support people, pay them what they're worth. Yeah.
Exactly.
And it's also law now that if you're looking for a job, your employer or prospective employer cannot ask you.
In California,
what your previous salary was.
Yeah. Oh, I'm glad. I didn't know that they could ask that before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Could.
Yeah. It's one of those things, like, there's a large movement in the tech space right now to actually start talking about what people are paid. You know, it's something that we've always been told not to do.
Yeah.
But the only person that benefits is the employers.
That's the only person that benefits. It doesn't benefit anybody else.
I mean, I'm sorry. You know, if you and I are doing the same job, we should probably be getting paid the same thing. Yeah. I don't know.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. Well, that's fun. This is our politics minute.
Yeah, happy 2018. Yeah, let us know how you spent your Christmas holiday, your New Year's, and I'm looking forward to this year.
I got to thank Kenji real quick because I cooked about 50 Kenji recipes over the holidays.
Nice. Oh, that's awesome.
I did the slow oven prime rib, turned out great. Yep. I did the Hasselback potato gratin, which is the best potatoes I've ever had in my life.
Oh, awesome.
I think I did Alice Waters cream spinach because that's the classic that we
can't
always
go wrong
do.
With that.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see, some cakes, some beef stew. Mm. And then it's Kenji. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Brought a lot of joy.
And Happy New Year, everybody.
Yeah, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Merry Christmas. Happy Holidays. Kwanzaa. Hanukkah. Whatever you're going to celebrate.
Festivus.
Whatever you celebrated. Festivus.
Whatever you celebrated.
Whatever you celebrated. Happy New Year.
See you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye, guys.